Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host at Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
very white guy.
And you're very white indeed. This is the final John from Philly.
Our home base. Yes. Where the podcast was born.
Yes. We're taking it to another state.
On the road.
On the road again.
Pure Michigan.
Yes. Well, if you have never joined us before, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. Just search at Interracial John. Again, that's J-A-W-N. We also really love feedback. And if you give us a 5-star review on either Stitcher or iTunes, we will read it on the air. You can also email us any comments, questions, or concerns. And you can email us at interracialjohn@gmail.com. And as long as it's not crazy, we will read it on the air as well. And you can also...
You know, you didn't have that qualification with the 5-star
review. Well,
let me ask you this. Because I know it's from the Black Eyed Chips and Rod and Karen. I've heard them recently, like, had like a slight addendum to how they like if you leave a 5-star review and it's not crazy, like if it's a 5-star review and it's like someone else's podcast, I'd read it. If it's a 5-star review for me, you could almost say anything other than like, I'll just say anything until someone writes something.
No, but it was Rod and Karen, the only reason why they did, because somebody wrote in and was dissing Karen.
And that was a 5-star review?
Yes.
Oh, see, you can't write a 5-star review and insult me.
That's why they made the newer rule.
The addendum?
Yes. Oh, okay. It had nothing to do with anybody else's podcast. It was because somebody was...
So, if you're out there and you have a podcast and you want your podcast to get a plug, write us a 5-star review.
Just put your podcast right in there. Say whatever you want. We'll read it on the air.
That's right.
You can also leave us a voicemail at 657-JAWNERS. That's J-A-W-N-E-R-S.
I know you're like way back, Navy Dad. I know you're listening, but you asked about a phone number. There you go. You can call. Yeah, and Kat, you asked about a phone. We're not live, but you can call too.
Yep. 657-529-6377. If it's under 3 minutes, we'll play it on the air. That's another shout out to the Black Eyed Chips, who was under the weather this week.
So yeah,
wishing him a quick recovery from his illness. I don't think it was anything serious, just a cold or something, but still, we miss you, Roderick. So what's going up, dude? What's going on?
Has it been like 2 months since it's just you and I? I'm not complaining about guests.
It's been about 6 weeks, I think. Six episodes.
I see on our list we have some like rando shit that like we wouldn't bore our guests with.
I was just like saving stuff. Like nobody besides us will want to talk about this shit. So
like that couch, I love it. That's good.
Well, we'll get to it.
I've been wanting to get off my chest.
Yeah, sure. Of course you have. So we had a busy week last week, actually. We recorded our 50th episode, which was huge.
Ding, ding there.
Ding. And
with associate producer,
yes,
Carl the Original Johnner.
That's right. See, Money was in the house, so that was awesome having him on, and he's going to be on at least once a month moving forward.
Yeah, we're going to do a recording bit with him.
So I'm pretty excited about that, so be on the lookout for that. Shout out to you, Carl, and who we talk about all the time, so I'm sure people have gotten used to us just saying his name. They probably didn't think it was real, but he is real.
Well, you know, and he was very fluid. He just kind of like fit in.
He was good. He was like, you know,
he busted me with that cabbage patch in during fucking...
He's hilarious.
But I don't know if I told you, I walk down the next morning, I wake up, I'm in my robe, come out. He's like, oh, hey, Drew, I don't know if you heard. I was on a podcast last night. I was like, Carl.
Yeah, and he went straight from here to a business trip to Las Vegas. So he sent us a picture today at the airport. He was sitting across from one Herman Cain, former GOP Republican candidate for president.
And am I crazier to look like he was sitting in like an airport TGI Fridays?
Like it really was like, you should probably have an assistant or something.
And he had all that luggage under
it was
there.
Way too much luggage.
So much luggage.
You couldn't check a bag? That's where you at, Herman?
And I thought whatever. I know he ran for president, but like, and we never discussed it. I'm not going to Wikipedia and look it up.
Nope.
But I swear he was like in charge of like Domino's or Pizza Hut or Little Caesars or some shit.
It was one of those pizza companies.
He should have been rich enough to not be flying like in airports. He should be like Teterboro.
He didn't own it though. Just to be clear, he just was the CEO, I think.
All right. You'd still think like former CEO wouldn't be flying
You would think
TGI Fridays out of Vegas.
Yeah. Well, it was a busy movement weekend week for us as well. We went Thursday night to New York City to the March to Justice Town Hall, which gave an opportunity for Justice League NYC to discuss the next steps and things they've been working on, and also some time for me to see all of my March to Justice family, which was awesome. And shout out to all of them. It was really great. And Carl and Very White Guy tagged along. Hopefully it wasn't too much insularness on the part of us.
It wasn't insular, but y'all definitely have, like, I mean, let's be honest, you march 250 miles over 9 days. There's a bond that you're going to have and share. And when you see each other, it's like, oh, my God. And it's just me and Carl, like, I guess let's go sit down. Not that I felt out of place, because I know all of them and they're all very kind and very inviting. But there's definitely you all fall into a very seamless, you know, march repertoire almost.
Yeah, there's definitely a cadence and
And it's not, and I don't begrudge it, and I don't think anything of it. Just, you know, I like it. I actually like it.
It is. It was good. And we had dinner in the city, and then we came home.
You can't just yada yada dinner. We ate Peter fucking Luger's.
We didn't eat at Peter Luger's after the town hall. We went to Tony's, so that's why I yada yada.
Oh, you did yada. But that was good. You're right. I'm still thinking the whole weekend.
Well, just we didn't get to the rest of the weekend yet.
That steak, though. All
right. And then we took the train for that trip to the city and back. So, funny thing happened on the train.
Oh, are you talking about where you and Carl are sitting in the...
So, you know, on the New Jersey Transit, which we take to the city and back, it's only like an hour and a half. It's a really quick ride. It's really easy and gets you right into Midtown or Penn Station. Yep. So we're on the way back, and it was kind of crowded because it was it was not the last train, but it was like the third or second to last train.
It was like an 11:50 train.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot Friday night or Thursday night, was a lot people were on it, whatever, coming back to Jersey. And sure enough, there's like four seats that are two seats and two seats that are facing each other. And then there's like, you know, row of seats that are all facing the same way. So
what you mean to say is there's lots of rows of two, with an aisle in between.
Right.
And some at the very end of the cars, one of those rows of two flips the other way. So it's four seats facing each other with not a lot of leg room.
Right.
But it's a four-seater.
Right.
And you and Carl sat in that four-seater, right, like opposed, diametrically opposed, correct, or diagonally from each other.
Right.
I sat in one of the two in the aisle across the way.
Correct.
And quickly, the train's filling up.
Yep.
And someone even sits next to me.
Yep.
I have a passenger sitting next to me. And was it a older white couple? What was it?
It was. So there were two sets of the seats, like Carl and I were sitting in the car. And we were in one, and these two, I guess Middle Eastern, they sounded Indian to me, but I'm not 100% sure. Maybe they were from Pakistan, but they were sitting in the other two. So they were sitting just like Carl and I were, diagonally. These two white people, older white people, walk on the train. And I kid you not, I saw her look at me and Carl and like assess whether she felt comfortable asking us to sit there. And she was like, nope. And they walked over and they...
It was like a white supremacy like decision tree.
They were like, beep, boop, 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 boop. Let me go
too
ask
black,
those
too black,
two...
Too black,
Yeah, let me go ask the two brown people if they mind
they're not,
sharing
They're
the
not wearing
us.
Turbans.
No.
We can sit over here.
Does not compute. Me and Carl were cracking up.
I wish I had texted about it. I saw the look, too. I was like, those white people just... And y'all, no one sat next to you the whole time.
No, we were the only... The train was ass full and not a single person sat next to
us. And I dare say, I think you and Carl, at least in our car, were the only black people.
Yes, we were. So...
Is that
small perk?
Black privilege. You get to sit alone on a train. And you say, I got white privilege.
Yes. Then we saw a movie Friday, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But then on Sunday, we went to the fucking Roots picnic in Philly, which was hot.
Yes, literally.
And very crowded. But oh my gosh, it was just the most beautiful cadre of black people ever. Every kind of black. Carl said to me, there was every kind of black person here that you could think of.
Well, and I remember we talked before we went, like, you know, Philadelphia is, right, I guess, a chocolate city, even though it's...
I don't think it's a chocolate
city. It's only like 12 or 13. It's like the national average. It's 13%. But, and we knew the Roots. We thought, okay, it's going to be a predominantly black
don't
show.
Don't say we. That was you.
No, we were talking about it. We were having a discussion.
And I said it's going to be all black people.
And I said, well, I'll be there. So our little group will at least be like 25, like one-fifth.
One-third.
Well, I guess...
Oh,
Davey.
No, because Davey was there.
Right, so a quarter, right? So it was 25% white. I said, I think when I said I'd put, I don't know if the over-under would be like 88, 90. And you're like, I don't know. I think that's too low. And it was like 97.
I said 95. I said I'll say 95 only because I figured there would be a bunch of black chicks like me with white boyfriends.
And there was. There.
And there were a hell of white chicks like black chicks like me with their white boyfriends.
But that was the majority of white people. I don't know if I saw a white couple.
No, I didn't see one white couple. Maybe I saw one. It wasn't prevalent, but it was beautiful. And then I'm on the internet service is really bad. So when I got home, I had started getting all of these like Instagram and Twitter messages from like all these people that were there. Gabe from Real Justice was there, and Taylor was there, and Erica Totten was there, and Feminista was there. It seemed like the whole Eastern Seaboard of black people were there. So it was great.
And it was an awesome day and a great concert, but it's the worst fucking venue.
Oh yeah, that venue.
Oh my God, Penn's Landing is awful.
Yeah, but you know they put a lot of stuff there. You know the thing is, like Philly doesn't have any good outdoor venues unless you're doing a stadium, which is like not most people can do a stadium.
Yeah, well, and the best
it's not festival-y.
Not that it because it's no longer Philly, but the Waterfront Park in Camden's fantastic for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but then it's not Philly.
But it's not Philly.
Right, so there's that. And then Sunday we went to the Left Forum in New York City where I was a panelist on the New York, Ferguson to New York panel, which was great and was wonderful. So I was happy to be able to go do that. My last speaking engagement before the move as well.
You know, we didn't talk very much about the Left Forum. I guess not surprising, but it reminded me a little bit when we went to the Amnesty International event. Obviously very, very white.
Yep.
The average, I think the median age might have been like 60. I mean, it was really, it skewed much older than I thought. And I heard, I don't know if we talked about it, but I heard some interesting conversations. A couple were talking with someone else they just met, and they were all sort of lamenting and commiserating that this younger generation and their decentralized approach to doing things was not going to work, and that they wish that they would accept that there needs to be some sort of organizational hierarchy. It was sort of interesting that they were here at the Left Forum kind of like, you know. And then just the whole, it's sometimes, not always, but like it gives me this impression, almost like you used to, like of wanting to do good sometimes more than really doing good. I don't know.
Yeah, I think even more so, like at least in our forum, in our panel that Jim Vertros put together, I think that, and this was, I think, a definite theme that I heard from a lot of the other panels, and I've actually watched since then some of the other panels that were taped or live streamed. Just there was this sense of, you know, as the left, let's just say that as a category, since it was the Left Forum, that they failed and they've really dropped the fucking ball. And that's why we are where we are today with the left movement, not talking about the Black Lives Matter movement, but the movement of the left and progressive, so to speak. So I think that it was probably a little bit sobering for a lot of them to be in these rooms and
perhaps
hear that sentiment echoed over and over again by so many people. And I do think, you know, the age thing just comes up generally speaking, and it does all the time. I don't think it's anything new under the sun. You know, you hear people that were in SNCC or on the Southern Leadership Council, they'll say the same thing was going on in the 50s and 60s where the older establishment thought that, you know, sit-ins were wrong and provoking and, you know, there's a lot that goes into just the changing of generational approaches. So, I thought it was a decent conference. I thought that it was a little more honest with itself than the Amnesty conference was.
Oh, that's a lot more honest.
A lot less self-congratulatory than the Amnesty conference was. And so for that, I appreciated it.
Yeah, and I guess maybe there's, and I don't know why, maybe this is like a bias of mine and I'm acting all snooty about it. There's just something about these organized events sometimes that it seems there's that line between the Ally Industrial Complex and, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I think
like the book fairs and dudes selling the, like, you know, I'm a Marxist t-shirt.
There definitely is that line there. I don't think the Left Forum, this is its 18th year. I don't think it's quite the machine that.
No, I don't think it is at all. Is,
but I do hear you. But I also think there is need for organization in some ways. And I think that there's different ways to look at how that works and what.
Yeah, there's networking and connection. Yeah, there's a lot of happens. Different things. I hear you.
You know, it's interesting. And I was happy to be invited and happy to participate. And hopefully they'll invite me back next year. So we'll see.
That would be great. Yeah. That would be great.
Well, let's get into the rest of the show.
I have my news clip up. We're still tying the left one. I'm slow. Don't yell at me. You hate me.
The news is turning on.
You can't be that way. We just started.
That's my point.
That's your point?
Yeah.
So here in New Jersey, Camden, no less, they had a little incident after a Southern music, concert. But they were flying the Confederate flag, revelers, in Camden, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Where almost half, 48% of the population identify as black.
In the city of Camden.
City of Camden. Yeah. So the annual festival of country music station WXTU at the Susquehanna Bank Center in Camden, that's that outdoor venue, ended with at least three people hospitalized after a parking lot brawl that left two stabbed and one severely beaten. No arrests were reported.
Just stop there, just so I can stop there really quick and just say, a brawl, two stabbed, one severely beaten, no arrests were reported.
Yeah, no arrests.
Okay, go ahead.
And they're not calling it a riot. Nope. Nobody's a thug. It's not violence erupts. It was a brawl. They're equivocating because it's the news. And and this is, you'll remember, this is the same concert that got Riley Cooper in trouble.
Yes.
Where he shouted about beating up all the N-word.
No, the concert he was at was the No Shirt Nation.
Oh, that was a Kesney. Okay. Well, I guess this concert's had its fair share of events over the years. But, I had a bunch of people, I posted about this in my Facebook group. A bunch of people were coming back saying, like, well, you know, freedom of speech, you can wave out your flag. And I don't decry, like, you know, you want to wave that flag? Fine. I feel like it's a loser's flag. I don't know what's so great about that heritage that you want to maintain. And I do think there's a context and a sensitivity to it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
what are you holding on to is what I want to
know. I don't have a hold on to, but like.
No, you know, but I'm saying people, you know, let's not say that a flag means nothing, because you don't fly it if it means nothing to you. You know, you don't.
I said it means nothing to me.
Well, you're not flying it, though.
True.
So that's my point. You can't say on the one hand, oh, it's just a flag. If it was just a flag, then why are they flying it then?
I don't know why
I don't have the habit of just, you know, putting out symbols of anything just because. If I put a bumper sticker on my fucking car, I'm not just going to put any old bumper sticker back there. Right? And that's just a bumper sticker. I'm not at a concert with thousands of people flying a flag. I just think that, you know, there is something to be said for what symbolism means. And if you're going to fly the Confederate flag, there is symbolism behind that. And you flying it, there's meaning to that too.
Well, here's a quote. Said the flag waving tailgate arrived at 7 a.m. to wait. Arrived at 7 a.m. He wasn't drunk at all. To wait for the 3 p.m. concert, and said the flag was a reference to the antebellum South. More or less, the people flying them are from the South, said Mike Fallon, 24, of Phoenixville, or they want to represent the old South before slavery was abolished. Oh, I guess that's a different person quoting. But Fallon's friend, who was flying a Confederate flag on a hockey stick from the back of his pickup truck, asked not to be identified because he recognized that his opinions might not be popular. It's about when people worked for a living. When they worked for a living, he said, of the banner of slaveholding states, instead of getting everything for free.
What? Let's just stop there. He said of slaveholding states.
That's he didn't say that. That was the article put that.
No, but
in.
He says that it was a banner of slaveholding states. When people worked for a living instead of getting everything for
That's
free.
In the same sentence.
How can that be in the same fucking sentence? You literally were using black people for free labor. Like, got everything for free. You got everything for fucking free. Literally, this is what I'm talking about, where you're like, oh, people try and argue with you. Like, no, there's no fucking argument to be made. You're holding on to antebellum South when people worked hard and had slaves? Like, fuck
no,
you, dude.
I took exception with the waving the flag. He's like, this is just kind of just the flag of losers. It's, you know, it's just.
Think that belittled. To me, like, that argument is it belies the problem behind it. It's not just a flag for losers. It isn't. And I find that comeback to be cute, but I also think that it gives them a pass. It allows it to be like, well, they're the stupid ones. And it's like, yeah, they're the racist ones, though. It's not just stupid. It goes beyond that.
If we're coming out and saying that the Confederate flag is now a symbol of racism and it, you know, should be addressed as such, it's on the fucking, like, Southern Carolina, like, state house and shit, man.
I think you're proving my point here, not disputing it.
I'm not. I'm just saying that's a hill to climb.
It's not a hill to climb. I think it's widely seen as such.
I'm talking about getting it, like, you know, you say it's widely seen as such, yet it's still flown in parking lots and in friggin' state houses and shit.
Listen, I'm not saying that people should be put in jail for flying it. I'm just saying expect the consequences of flying it and don't try and pretend like it doesn't mean what it means.
Well, the guy certainly knew exactly what it means because he refused to be identified.
Actually, he doesn't because his claim about it being about when people worked for a living means he doesn't know anything at all.
Well, but that's again why I'm just like, it's a flag. Maybe I just... Idiots, you know, and this guy clearly is an idiot, but there's no accounting for stupid.
Speaking of idiots,
there's a lot of it. You're talking about the Arizona mosque?
Yeah, because, you know, just so we can go from one type of bigot to another, I'm sure everyone's heard by now that there was a demonstration of white privilege. Just ridiculous. In Phoenix, Arizona, on May 29th, Muslim worshipers were at a mosque in Phoenix doing their daily prayers, one of the five daily prayers they do. And in front of the Islamic Community Center of Phoenix, a group of anti-Muslim hate mongers decided they were going to hold an armed protest while these people and families were praying inside their place of worship.
And just to make it, like, really clear, we're talking, like, hundreds of dudes, like a biker gang with assault rifles and long rifles and guns in, like, fatigues and camos and T-shirts that say F Islam and all kinds of shit in front of a house of worship as people are going to their daily prayer.
Yeah.
That to me, you know, and it's – I understand that that's – quote unquote constitutionally afforded you that you have the right to do that. It's so onerous and so disgusting. But there was a counter protest to him. There were, you know, people out there trying to shield, you know, those going to worship from these assholes.
Yeah, there was a counter protest and that was great to see. But the fact that they even do that though, and it's such a like crazy. Just to know, people are sitting in jail right now because they were protesting in Baltimore. Right now.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And these people showed up armed with guns. Not bricks.
Nope.
Not their voices.
Nope.
Not their feet. Just actual armed assault rifles.
Look, we're even you and I. The fucking news is calling that a protest. Yet when Black Lives, protest actions, you know, hands up, and there are no guns, they're called rioters, they're called fucking animals, or also the news will vilify people for gathering in protest of killing of an individual, yet show up with a bunch of guns in protest of a fucking, like,
wait, show up and be white.
Yeah, show up, be white.
Let's start. Don't forget that.
You're right, that's important. Be white and show up with a bunch of fucking guns. And that's totally cool. That is a fucking protest.
Yeah. And this is the thing that it just put on.
Like the Bundy Ranch.
Is this idea. It's exactly like the Bundy Ranch, you know.
Because those motherfuckers went down into town and like surrounded a government office with fucking weapons and shit. And people are like, it's a protest. It's a protest. He doesn't want to pay his fucking taxes. He doesn't want to pay the land manage taxes. Quote unquote, he says it's unfair. But the fuck? It drives me nuts.
It's crazy.
And this guy, he did the. And I don't know if it's like. The that's the game now, but he came out. He was the guy that did the Draw Muhammad contest in Texas that got, there was some individuals, people that came out, tried to attack that protest, mm-hmm. the Draw Muslim Muhammad, and he had $10,000 worth of private security that ended up killing these two extremists at this Draw Muhammad contest. He knows drawing Muhammad is like, you know, inappropriate onerous. He does it on purpose. He fucking went and did this protest in Arizona, and people like you and I and everyone else are rightfully kind of shitty with him. And now he feels threatened and attacked, and he's going to have a fucking GoFundMe, and he's going to go on all the talk show circuits. I'm an average American trying to blah, 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 and I'm just saying what everyone's thinking, and now I'm under attack. It's like trolling or almost. It just is just bleh. It's crazy.
The police were there, literally. They said their aim there was to protect the 500 anti-Muslim protesters.
That's their fucking...
That was what they were sent there to do. So, that sucks.
And you know, and these fucking dudes out there are saying shit like, you know, this is America and blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah, these individuals in Phoenix are Americans too. You know, you can be Muslim and American at the same fucking time. You know, being one doesn't eliminate your standing in the other group and the privileges afforded you. You're right. You get to be here like an asshole with a gun. But they get to fucking pray and not be threatened by assholes with guns in front of their house of worship.
But it just is this notion. It's like those were Americans in the mosque. Like that's the part that gets me. It's like they don't even get the irony in them being like, but those people are Americans. You don't get to say on the one hand that you're fighting for America against Americans. Like the whole thing is just so fucking stupid.
That's why they have those Confederate flags and those things, because they're thinking of it a different time in America, back when white people were even more fucking supremacist and horrible. Mm. That's to them the good old days.
Yeah, I guess.
Blah, blah, blah. America.
Speaking of how shitty the system is. I did a Storify about incident that happened in Hamilton County, Ohio last week, actually Friday. And at Cute But Not Funny, Lady Beezus, shout out to her and her beautiful son, who had his last day of school Thursday. So Friday was his first day of summer vacation, and he was out riding his bike on his street, and police not just stopped him, turned the lights on, had him off of his bike, and basically, like, stopped him as though they were doing, like, a stop, you know.
And how old is he again?
He's 13. 13 years old.
13.
They put their lights on. They got out of their car asking if he was, quote, from this area. They said they didn't, quote, recognize him.
Oh, they know every child in the entire town?
It just so happened that her white friend happened to be driving by and asked, what the fuck are you doing? Like, he's on his bike. Her son called her in tears. He refused to leave the house for the rest of the day. I don't even know. I mean, I was so incensed reading it. I could feel her, you know, her hurt, you know, the anger, the sense that you have no power to protect your child, you know, in those moments. You know, he said he was terrified and embarrassed. He didn't even go to his friend's house after that. He just went home and cried.
And he sat in his room. He wouldn't come out. You know, and I think, and I said something to someone on Twitter about this, as a white person, there's just no possible way for us to fully appreciate, you know, we can try to understand and we could try to, you know, sympathize, but we can't fully empathize with that moment because it's never going to happen to us or our child.
Nope.
And the impact that moment has on the rest of that individual's life, and moments like that are going to happen again and again and again. But just imagine, for the first time, your world is shattered and you realize the weight of being black in America and what that entails. That just, you know, you can't understand that as a white person. And I think the trauma that creates, like he was probably had like some sort of PTSD for a period of time.
Oh, not for a period of time. I think he definitely did. And several people mentioned that, like, you know, tell me that her son isn't traumatized right now.
Yeah. And it just, you know, and that is, you know, and just there's no way to accept that. And I just, there's no way to justify that. And that is one story of probably 10,000 that happened to 13-year-old boys that day. 13-year-old black boys that day.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so, like...
And girls, brown boys and girls, every day go through that exact scenario.
Every day, and it was, you know, it was the first day of his summer vacation. The very, very first day of it. So this is how he got to start his vacation. You know, I tweeted at the time, I said, white America will never understand the trauma inflicted upon black and brown children at these tender ages, when their sense of self is still developing, when they are emotionally at their most vulnerable, when the things they end up believing about themselves come to take root. It's just, you know, I don't even know. I just was so upset that day. It just broke my heart because, you know, as a parent, I'm sure she wanted to keep this moment away from him forever.
Yeah.
And not have him, you know, be in that space and just.
We had another mutual friend on Facebook at one point said, you know, dear white person that audibly clicked your door as my son walked past.
Yes.
Thank you for making me have the conversation now. I didn't want to at 12 years old, you know, and you think of Tamir Rice and the way that you know, we as white people and society view 12 and 13-year-old black, in particular men, black boys, I shouldn't say men, black, you know, young children. It's just terrible, you know?
Yeah.
That at that age were already vilifying and priming the you know, the shit, the pump.
It is. It's just, you know, forever he's going to remember that day. You know, it's never going to not be something that he thinks about. It's never going to not be the day that his skin betrayed him, the day that, you know, it just, it sucks. Well,
and
so,
and I would say put it in the links, and I would in particular implore listeners that are white to read it and sit with it and share it on Facebook for other white folks, because it's, it, you know, it's firsthand account, you know, of her words about her son. Cute but not funny was her on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's so horrible to have to think that happens constantly. And like I said, I don't think there's any way I could fully understand or empathize, you know, completely understand what that's like, because it'll never happen to me or anyone I...
Yeah, for sure. And I think especially the juxtaposition of the summer vacation, you know, I even wrote at the beginning of my my Storify, I said, summer vacation, what a wonderful time to be a kid. Days filled with sunshine, sleeping late, meeting with friends, watching movies, and for most kids, riding your bike. This is a time when white parents experience a level of enjoyment that black parents are not afforded. Black yeah. parents know that nationwide summer vacation signals a time of increased fear for their children. Black children do not have the luxury of carefree bike rides to enjoy the first day of summer vacation. They are even in their own neighborhoods, their own streets, seen as the enemy. They are stopped, questioned, harassed, and traumatized because their skin is a signal that they do not belong. For many black children, this is the moment that their childhood innocence is shattered, the minute that their skin betrays them, the memory that triggers a lifetime of painful memories and fear. And I included two tweets from the beginning of the day, a couple of hours before he was stopped, just to show you how normal their day was going. She tweets first around 7:30. I have so much to do today and I keep getting stressed until I remember it's my last day of work before vacation. She tweets about 30 minutes after that at 8:12. My son woke up and said, sucks, you have to go to work, and promptly went back to sleep. Hashtag parenting during summer. And then at 10:43, her next tweet, my son was just stopped on his fucking bike by the cops.
And we shouldn't have to read the whole thing, but she went to the station. She went and I think she did file a complaint, but they treated her so, you know, again, the disrespect for the incident and how inappropriate it was, it didn't stop with the incident. You know, so, oh, the officer's out, not here, you have a seat, hours later, we can't get the paperwork. It just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, you know what's next.
Although, this isn't really a, I mean, it is Yes All Cops, but it's a twist.
Yo. Okay. So, a pig in Michigan.
No. An actual, like, four-legged barnyard animal pig.
An actual pig in Michigan. A Michigan pig, tired of having its name sullied by association, struck back at the coppers by using the back of their squad car as its own personal porta potty. A photo of the pig posted by Shelby Township Police Department shows just how pleased the little porker was with himself. This fucking pig is literally...
He literally has a smile.
He's the definition of a pig and shit.
He's literally smiling. He's like, yeah,
Huge fucking grin. It all started when the pig escaped its corral Thursday. Police received a 911 call from a woman who had been doing yard work when the swine charged her and chased her into her front yard, only to be distracted by a decorative ball. Hey, that happens to the best of us.
The pig or the lady?
The pig.
I think
it was the pig that was distracted. I'm pretty sure. Police responded and used a dog pole to corral the animal into the back of one of their squad cars. But little did they know that it was all going according to the piggy's devious plans. Well, let's say the pig either out of excitement or otherwise felt the need to use the back of our patrol car as a bathroom, Deputy Chief Mark Cole told CBS Detroit. And they put pictures of the aftermath.
And it wasn't just that he shit in the car.
No, like, he shit everywhere.
But pigs' hooves look like they're not exactly the, like, gentlest thing on the back of that vinyl or leather.
No,
whatever.
For real. They're shit everywhere in this fucking car. It looks like, you know, in Tommy Boy when there's a deer in it? And it, like, yeah, jumps out of the car. It looks just like that, but, like, it shit does. Everywhere.
That four-legged pig is a hero.
Go ahead, pig. Shout out to you, whatever your
name is. Fucking hero pig.
Yeah, we'll call him Wilbur. Good job.
And you know what, though? But, like, here's a pig, it's angry, it butted heads with somebody. They corralled it, they didn't tase it, they didn't kill it and serve it up for fucking breakfast. Like, they took more care in securing a barnyard animal than...
They did Freddie Gray.
They did Freddie Gray.
Not that it's the same to police department, but I hear you, for sure.
Just in general.
Just generally.
It's like that cop that killed a dog and they passed, like, a law and he got sanctioned and shit. I'm not saying, like, you know, he shouldn't have, but, like, you know, we're actually having impact and efficacy when police kill pets but not humans. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
So I know you wanted to talk about our couch.
You know, just, I don't know why, but because it went on for, like, 6 months.
Yeah.
And it was... the, like, stupidest customer service interaction. In fact, I don't know. I'm thinking up there is U-Haul boxes. Like, one of the two. Like, just like, it's like, come on the customer service. Like, I get that you're a big, inflexible conglomeration, but god damn. So we have a couch. It's got a recliner, and it's three pieces that fit together like a sectional. I'll call them out, Raymore and Flanagan. And I was fortunate enough to have had the foresight to get the protection plan. So shit broke on it, the recliner specifically. It's got a mechanism that's between the two couches that you pull that looks like a cable, right? And it broke like 2 years ago, and I called them and Platinum Protection. They came out and they fixed it. And same cable broke like 10, 12 months later in the exact same manner, like bloop, broke. So I call them again, and I was like, listen, I don't want this cable. Is there any other way to open and close the reclining portion? The cable keeps breaking. Like, why... You know, it hasn't even been 4 years and it's broken twice. I don't want to have you come out and fix it in the same manner again. So dude comes out. He's like, listen, there's a new thing. There's a bar that's, you know, like a metal bar instead of the pull cord. I was like, oh, that sounds significant improvement, this metal bar, than the pull cord. So he says, okay, but we don't have it. I'll order the part. I think, no problem. Was it like a month went by? And I forgot about it. You're like, what happened to the couch? I'm like, yeah, what did happen to the couch?
Yeah.
Like, I totally
it was
forgot.
Forever.
It was a long time. It was like 6 weeks. So I call back. I'm like, hey, you know, like, what happened to the couch? Like, oh, the part's on order. I was like, well, I understand that, but from where? Oh, from China.
China.
Right. I was like, okay, you're ordering a part from China. I'll give you some leeway. So maybe not like at the 3 month mark. And this is 3 months after they've already been out.
Right.
It's not 3 months since it's been broken. It's been like, it took them like 4 weeks to come out once it broke the first time. And then it's been 3 months since they came out. And I call them like, well, the thing from China, and it's going to be on this shipment and it's going to get in this date. I'm like, okay, I have a shipment and a date. I'll give them that. Date comes, a week goes by, I call back. And like, I'm getting to like the supervisor level. And I'll have to say, just to my own credit, I normally get like really shitty in these instances. I was pretty calm the entire time. I wasn't like a total dick. Like, I usually like pull out that male privilege, like vocal weaponry thing, you know, and I didn't do that. So, but I'm talking to like a supervisor but I'm still being like kind of aggrieved. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Come on. I've called you guys like six times, blah, 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 blah. So they finally, the supervisor says, I can just send you a new couch. I'm going to give you this middle piece
right.
of the reclining set. I'll send you a new one. And I was like, yeah, but it's going to have the same fucking cable mechanism right. I don't want.
That you've admitted is inferior.
It's like a piece of shit. I right. don't want that. Like, well, you know, I want you to have it fixed. And, you know, I understand. So we'll just
say. No, what happened with, we're going to be moving. And
so right.
like, listen, if we don't get it done now.
If we don't get it done now, we're not going to.
Right. So I said, just get the middle fucking piece, the new one.
Right.
And we'll deal with it from there. And just be a little more cautious. Pulling
Correct.
Open the
oh,
thing.
So she did say, I'll give you the new one. I'll have somebody come out with the new one. And then when this part comes from China, we'll ship it to
wherever
you.
Wherever we are.
Even if you're in Michigan.
Right.
Even if you've moved. Right. Okay, fine. So about like what? Like a month ago? Maybe 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, about a month ago.
You know, and again, took them a week or whatever to get the appointment. Here comes the new couch. And I'm like, great, new couch. They go to install it. And I'm like, wait a minute. It doesn't have the rip cord. It's got the metal bar. How come the new couch has the metal bar? Like, you told me that the metal bar had to be ordered from China. Like, that's
so
really...
we've been waiting on this couch for like 6 months
yep.
for no reason at
no
all.
No reason at all.
So shout out to that. And then last week,
just yeah, 2 days
a
ago,
giant package comes FedEx to us and wrapped in bubble wrap. I'm like, what the heck
from
is
China.
This? It's the new, well.
It's the rip cord.
It's the rip cord.
It's the shitty
case
part.
The rip cord breaks that we never got another rip cord, so.
I just, the entire thing, if they had understood, and they knew what I was talking about.
They kept pulling up the record, being like, "Okay, I see you talked to Sarah."
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you not know? It's like their ass didn't know what their hands were doing or something.
Honestly, though, they've now given us a new middle piece of a couch and sent a part from China when they could have just taken that bar off of the new couch and drove it over here and put it on for me.
Yeah, they could have, but they didn't.
And what was the other one? Oh, U-Haul boxes. We ordered boxes for the move, and we ordered them from U-Haul. And I'll give them a shout out because you can order boxes, and if you don't use them, you can return them. Like, there's a money-back guarantee. So you just order.
You just bring them back to any
U-Haul store. Right. So I over-ordered just to be like, hey, you know, I don't want to, like, run out of boxes, so let's get a shitload of boxes, and I'll just bring them back to – that's my – you know, I can do that. So we get a shitload of boxes. They come. They're leaning against the wall. We don't unpack them right away. We're like, okay, we're going to get packing in, like, a week. So it maybe take us 10 days. I start unboxing the boxes, and we're missing a bunch of shit. Like a lot.
Like a third of the order.
About a third of the order. So you know, and I'm angry, so you're like, I'll handle it. I got this, Drew. You know, don't you call him. You're going to just piss somebody off. So you're like, all right, you know, he can't overnight it, but they'll send it, you know, 2 days. It'll be here. So 2 days come.
It's here.
Shitload more boxes. I open it up, going through everything. They're missing, like, one thing again. And it's, like, the lid to, like, the one box.
One of the things they forgot, and then they forgot the lid to the thing, which came today again to a two-day air. My thing is, if they had sent everything at first, they spent more money doing
shipping
this.
Shipping it, absolutely.
Shipping it two-day air twice, it's craziness.
It took them three deliveries to get the...
To get the one order that I placed. Like, and I shipped, like, standard, because we didn't need it right away at all.
No.
It's ridiculous.
Contrast that with Amazon, which I don't think's ever fucked up an order. Like, literally ever.
Never.
And we get shit because we're close to their... They have a huge distribution center here in New Jersey. Yeah. We're like a hub because of the...
One time,
on
I ordered something on a Sunday morning, and I got it at 4 o'clock that day.
The same... On Sunday.
That day.
It's on a Sunday.
Crazy.
And I don't understand how... I don't want to say that makes fiscal sense for them. Like, they must have people that are either non-union or they don't get paid extra on Sunday. Like, Sunday must not be a...
No, you got it all wrong. The thing is, I'm betting that they had to deliver to this area anyways for somebody who did pay for, like, one day air or whatever. And so they were like, they probably have some sort of algorithm. And if they're already expending the gas to get the package to the person who did pay, it only makes sense to give us the one that we didn't
pay. I'm saying one day never includes Sunday.
Yes, it does.
You can one day on a USPS or a UPS or FedEx, you can include Sunday delivery?
Yes, you can.
Oh, you can?
Yeah.
I thought Sunday was always verboten.
I don't know if FedEx does it, but USPS, you can pay for Sunday now. And Amazon, you always were able to pay. And FedEx, for sure, you can get Sunday delivery.
Okay. I bet you're right. If one person...
It's an algorithm.
If you're sending a dude out in a van for one box, might as well put a bunch of
other
boxes out
there. That are within X number of miles from whoever you are.
Well, but we get shit in one day frequently. If you order before 10 a.m., you have a more than 50% chance of getting it by 4 that afternoon.
They have it in the warehouse that's coming here pretty quickly. So I saw this really cool set of new words that everybody should be using.
Okay.
So let's see if you can guess what they mean.
These are words of, like, just new words.
New words.
Okay.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so master dating.
Master dating.
Master dating, yeah. Master dating. It's a noun.
I was going to say, like, somebody who's really good at dating, but now I feel like it's a portmanteau of masturbating and dating.
Uh-huh, and what would that mean then?
A portmanteau of ew. I guess, doing something dirty while out on a date?
It means going out alone for a movie or a restaurant, because masturbating you do to yourself. Right?
I see. Like, so going to a movie by yourself.
Yeah.
I'm master dating.
Uh-huh.
I've done that.
Mm-hmm. So bedgasm.
That's when you get into bed and the sheets are brand new and it's like, oh my God, that's the best.
Yeah, it's a feeling of euphoria experience when climbing into bed at the end of a very long day. You did good on that one. Selfish. CELLFISH.
Oh, spending all fucking day on your phone, like just on your cell phone.
Totally. Dudevorce.
Dude, I just had a dudevorce from
you
my buddy Josh.
Did have a dudevorce.
A dudevorce.
When two bros officially end their friendship, dudevorce. Ask hole.
someone who just fucking constantly that me and my mom call that "What about a pink elephant?" Yeah. And someone's asking so many questions, and they're absurd and left field. Like, but what about if the pink elephant walks across in front of you, and you've got this pink elephant? Like, but what are you going to do then?
You can call them assholes.
Assholes. I like. Someone I'm going to use that. I'm
someone
use
who asks many stupid, pointless, or obnoxious questions.
Assholes.
Internest.
When you're online, just fucking like all ass day, and you're just in home and you don't leave, you're like nesting, but on the internet.
Yeah, it says the cocoon of blankets and pillows you gather around yourself while spending long periods of time on the internet.
The internest. I like that one.
Textpectation.
When you're waiting on someone's text, like, why haven't they texted me
back? I hate when the dot is going. Like, typing?
If there's Skypers out here, it's the pencil.
Pencil on
and then
Skype.
And then the worst is when someone writes and they delete it. It's erases. Yes. The pencil's got erased. I'm like, the fuck? What were they writing?
They're changing it.
I can see you scratching and then erasing, you son of a bitch. And then it'll go on for like 20 minutes. Oh, yeah. And then the response will be like, no. Okay.
Not even
you okay. Son of a bitch. I know you're the thumbs up. You were fucking writing and erasing for 20 minutes. You just did thumbs up. Asshole.
They were like, fuck it. Thumbs up. Non-versation.
Obviously that's again portmanteau of a conversation and non when someone's talking and the other person's not listening.
It's a completely worthless conversation or small talk.
Ah, okay.
Chair drobe.
And these are all portmanteaus again.
Yeah, they're made up words.
I know. I'm thinking, what's the like wardrobe? I guess. Using your chair like a, you know, you throw all your shit on it. I put my suit on top of it.
That's you, dude.
That is. I have a chair drobe.
See, also floor drobe, which is what I'm more of. Errorist.
Errorist. Someone who loves making fucking mistakes.
Someone who repeatedly makes mistakes or is always wrong.
I'm an errorist.
An errorist. Unlightening.
Someone who says something that's so stupid it makes you stupid for just hearing it.
Yes, learning something that makes you dumber is unlightening.
Unlightening. You know, I have people in my life that are very unlightening.
Yes, unlightening. Hibernating.
Hibernating.
Yeah, hibernating.
Hibernation dating.
Yeah.
Fuck. That's my smooth mustache. That's dating, and then just being like, I'm going from monogamous to I'm like real serious. Something.
It's when a person ignores their friends in favor of a boyfriend or girlfriend.
Ignores their friends. Okay.
Destinasia.
Destinasia. I guess that's traveling in Asia.
No, it's when you get to where you're going to, but you forgot why you were going there.
Amnesia. Shoot! I do that. I do that from room to room. I'll get up.
Well, this
the couch.
Way you do that all the time. You're like, wait, why did I come in here? Columbusing. I think you know that one.
That's white people like, I figured out how to do Bantu knots that black people have been doing for 30 years.
You did not have to say Bantu knots.
Wasn't that in like a magazine?
No, it's true.
Did they call it something
apparently
like...
Apparently Mark Jacobs, they called it a mini bun.
A mini bun. Mark Jacobs invented the mini bun. Or they're Bantu knots, bitch. Mm-hmm. Quit Columbus and shit.
Yep. Universe. YOUNIVERSE. Universe.
When just they're very centered. Like everything's about me all the time.
Yep. Used to indicate that a person has knowledge only of him or herself. Their universe consists only of them. Carcolepsy.
Fall asleep in the car, dude.
Yeah.
My nieces have carcolepsy.
A condition where a passenger falls asleep as soon as the car starts moving.
Zoe and Faith and all them kids, especially from the train station, it's a good like 30-minute ride. It's all on the highway. There's like...
Yes. Ambitious.
when you bite off more than you can chew and it pisses you off.
No, it's a striving to be more of a bitch than the average.
Ambitious.
Unkeyboardinated.
You can't type for shit, man.
Yes, when you are unable to type without repeatedly making mistakes.
Unkeyboardinated. You know, I type with only like, because my hands are so big. I only use my thumb and the index and the middle finger and occasionally my ring or pinky, but I don't use all 10 fingers like you're supposed to. I type with like 6 fingers.
Right.
But pretty good. I'm like maybe 65 minutes.
You can get those. After clap.
Oh, that's white people clapping too late when it's off the beat.
Yeah, the last person who claps after everyone else is clapping. It's like always that one clap.
I'm still trying to get it going.
Beer boarding.
Beer boarding.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like
extracting secret information from a colleague by getting them drunk.
Oh, like waterboarding with beer. Yes. Beer board.
Nerd jacking.
When there's a nerd in a group and you steal the other group's nerd?
No, it's when you're filling a conversation with unnecessary detail about one's passion to an otherwise uninitiated and uninterested layperson.
You gotta come see this thing. It's so amazing.
Yeah, no, exactly. I don't, dude.
Not at all.
Doppelbanger.
I guess fucking somebody that looks like you?
Exactly that. ding, ding, ding. A person who has sexual intercourse with someone that looks identical to them but is not related.
You know, I've seen couples like that, like that almost look brother-sister.
Yeah, they had that on Seinfeld, yeah. Wasn't it? Jerry was dating himself. Epiphanot.
When you think you have an epiphany, but it's really not.
Yes, an idea that seems like an amazing insight to the conceiver, but in fact is pointless, mundane, stupid, or incorrect.
I literally like embody like 2/3 of this list. I have an epiphanot almost daily.
Nomonym.
Nomonym?
Mm-hmm.
No. It's not...
You're not going to get this one. No. It's a food that tastes like another food, like nom nom, you know, nom.
A food that tastes like another food, like yeah. Tofu tastes like chicken, this tastes like chicken. A nomonym.
Yeah,
a
nomonym.
That's kind
of
cute.
That's the last one. So, those are funny, though. Those I like good. A lot of those, though. Those I'm going to use them.
We'll have to start, yeah, definitely.
Dude Vorse.
Dude Vorse.
It's funny.
So we were on the single simulcast.
Shout out to Rashane.
Rashane. And I can't believe he had never heard of the literal videos.
Literal videos are everything.
And I mentioned the what I thought was the best one, which was the...
Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Total Eclipse of the Heart. But I was poking around and I found that there's... It's like a thing, like literal videos, and there's more of them. And they listed the top 12 best little videos. You want to maybe
so
I'll
first explain what it is. A literal video is basically when somebody dubs over a song using the same melody and the same cadence, but instead of singing the lyrics of the song, they describe what's actually happening in the video
in literal
literally,
format.
Yes,
got it.
So
and
yeah.
So there was we mentioned the one, and there's 12 apparently. So I'll read the 12 that are there, and why don't you pick two of them we'll listen to?
Okay, so let's go with them.
Number 12, You're Beautiful by James Blunt.
Oh,
and
God.
If you remember, he's kind of naked in that
yeah,
video.
He's naked the whole video, okay. I think.
The Rainbow Connection by Kermit the Frog.
Oh, shit.
These are by different people. I don't know if you need to know who does it. Just a Friend by Biz Markie.
Oh, man.
And remember, he's dressed like an old man at the piano.
Yeah.
Well, this one we can't play because the video is missing, but all Making right. Love Out of Nothing at All
well,
by Air Supply.
I love that song, but I probably wouldn't pick it.
Making Love Out of Nothing at All. I don't remember that video. Head Over Heels, Tears for Fears.
Ooh, I might have to pick that one.
80s was good for these literal videos.
Yeah, because those videos make no sense in the 80s.
This one's also missing. 1 Week, Bare Naked Ladies. Oh, shit, I would have picked that. That's the Chinese chicken.
1 week since you looked at me.
Chinese chicken and the Chinese chicken. Okay, sorry, going on the next page. Anything for Love by Meatloaf.
You knew Meatloaf was going to be up there.
And that one, I'll have to find it somewhere else, but this particular video has been taken down.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. Please pick Safety Dance by Men Without Hats.
I can
hats.
Pick two. I'll think about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Separate Ways by Journey. Yeah. Oh, 80s awesomeness. Mm-hmm. Love is a Battlefield, Pat Benatar.
I think I've seen that one, so I probably won't pick that one.
Take on Me by A-ha.
I've definitely seen that one.
I've seen that, too.
It's good.
And Total Eclipse of the Heart, Bonnie okay. Taylor, which we mentioned
all
yesterday.
All right, so I'm going to pick for the first one for us to give a listen is You're Beautiful by James Blunt. Not because I like that song, but I think it's the video is really stupid, so I'm sure the lyrics will be funny. So,
all right.
Let's hear it.
I'll turn around slowly. I feel the camera look of despair. I look real upset. Now he's my hair. Not sure why I'm standing here. I'm in the cold alone. I probably should have thought it and brought my phone. I'm stripping off. I'm stripping off. I'm stripping off for you. It's freezing out here, but it's all so clear that I am a pretty sight.
let's look about some white.
That's good. That's pretty good. And then, just because I think it's the greatest, why don't we just do the original?
Random use of candles, empty bottles, and cloth. And can you see me through this fence? Creepy dollar window, when what looks like a bathrobe, Bennett in the shot of dangling bulbs. Close up of some candles and dramatically posing, then stock footage of a moon in the sky. Messing up my close up with a floating blue curtain. Now let's see who's coming in from outside.
Hilarious.
That's so funny.
You know, that was better because the production value. They actually had somebody doing
the double or whatever.
Yeah, the double, slow mo dove.
Yeah. So, for those of you who are older, let's say, you know, more mature.
You talking about me?
No, just generally speaking, you may remember a little thing called AIM, which was
AIM, dude. AOL Instant Messenger.
And you had to make up, you know, a username. And I think nowadays, you know, we know the significance of picking a username. But, you know, back then, it was still just the kids on the internet. And the kids, I mean, junior high school students for the most part. And then, you know, those people got older, but they still had these names. So BuzzFeed did a really funny video about people explaining their original childhood AIM names.
I guess that was kind of like a handle back then.
It definitely was a handle.
You didn't think of it as such.
No, you didn't understand. Well, you thought of it that way, but you didn't think of it, of what it would mean. Like that
to other people.
See you as such. So some of them, they say them and some they don't. So I'll just say the ones because they're holding up a sign in the video that says what their name is. So this first one is Cute Lil Thang 88.
Cute Lil Thang 88.
Yeah.
I was a weird kid and I wanted the popular girls to accept me into their group. And I thought having a screen name like this would trick them into thinking I was one of them.
Understandable.
Yeah.
What else 13 John said?
Chain_gang_soldier 69.
And it was my favorite wrestler, and he called his fans the Chain Gang. And me being 13 at the time had to add a 69 at the end.
I mean, what else can you expect from a person who wears her name in hoop earrings?
Cuban cutie forever.
Cuban and proud, fresh out of the quinceañera stage.
So I chose Harry J 69 when I was 18 and in college because I'm hairy, extremely hairy. I'm Jewish, and I like to 69.
I wanted to live in California.
California girl 17.
That's where all the pretty popular people lived. So there wasn't much of a speller.
She spelled it wrong. California.
All right. Like when you're scanning your friends list.
So this guy's name is Hey Ryan is on and the letter X. Okay. Hey Ryan is on the letter X. Got it?
So you wonder who's on. And then when you see that I'm on, you're like, hey, Ryan is on. I had the X because I forgot my password. I'm pretty proud of it, actually.
You never heard you, Ryan is on X? Oh,
He never thought it said that. Hey, Ryan is on X.
You threw me off, man. I'm like...
He can't stop laughing.
You ruined it.
I chose this name when I was about...
Stay Hood Brat 0131. This guy's...
So. 13 years old. Stay Hood is because I thought I would stay ghetto. Brat is because I was spoiled. And 0131 because I'm an Aquarius.
Chubby Star because... I was a little thick growing up, and clearly I'm a star. I don't know why I chose 27, actually. That's my age right now. Maybe this is all, like, full circle.
I wasn't very good at girls, so I thought that maybe being quirky and slapstick would help.
This guy chose Fun Fun for Everyone, the number 4 and the number 1. So Fun Fun, number 4, yeah. Everyone. Okay.
It didn't. I was shocked when this was not taken. It's not ironic enough to be funny. It's more painful.
I don't know why I thought this was cool.
Fart Lover 87.
Fart Lover 87. Okay.
His eyes, he can't believe himself.
He's like 13, dude. Fart Lover 87.
I thought farts were hilarious as a junior high student. And
of course you
sad
did.
Part is, I was born in 83, 87. Fart Lover 83 was taken. So I'm not alone in my loving
farts. It's almost 13. Fart Lover. That's, I get much worse, is that he couldn't get Fart Lover 83.
83.
He had to go with Fart Lover 87. I'm sorry.
You're losing it over there.
Somebody else had Fart Lover.
Lock it up.
Oh, for crying out loud.
So this is CyberCass 99. CyberCASS 99.
The girls online, and I thought I was a CyberCast. I know I like to not live with regrets. I was trying to get chicks on AOL.
I really liked soccer and
soccer dude.
But it's
like
a,
the word dude.
It's a girl, isn't
I thought
it?
Dudette sounded weird. I didn't want to have a number, so my dad suggested II because it means the second. So my AIM name is technically Soccer Dude the Second. I made up this word and I don't know what it means.
Gork 64.
And why do they always have numbers? Do they have to have a number?
I think if you, I don't know. I don't know why. I don't remember.
At all.
I think mine had a number.
I have no idea what I was going for.
Oh, vocal fry.
My AIM name was Black.
Black Barbie Goku 367.
Barbie Goku 367. Because it combined my four favorite things. Being black, playing with Barbies, Goku from Dragon Ball Z, and 367 because that was my precious locker number. I'm not ashamed.
I thought that was really
did
funny.
You have an AIM name?
Yeah, but I don't remember it.
I think mine was Andy Garneau because that was the hall I lived in, the dorm I lived in.
Mine was like Emma Chick or something weird like that.
And I almost could guarantee it was probably
69.
Andy, yeah, Andy Garneau 69. Yeah, if probably. That wasn't, I don't know, but probably. What does that say about 69. Me? Nothing. You want
not
to
know. Not much. It just says something about Andy Garneau. So.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. So we did go to the movies, though. We went to see freaking Mad Max.
That shit, I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
It was so good. It was so good, and it was, you know, the story was decent and all of that. The acting was fine, but visually, for real,
stunning.
Just the first, like, sequence, before they even put the title up, I hit you, and I was like, this is gorgeous. It was so beautiful. And the fight scenes and all of the...
And have it in 3D?
Oh, my God. It was
like,
so good.
I feel like... And I was trying to explain this when we were leaving the theater. I don't know if I said it thoroughly, but when movies use... And Carl said that they didn't use CGI, but of course they use CGI. I know there's a lot of stuff they did, like, you know, live, you know, out in the desert. But they absolutely had to augment... You do augment that with CGI. But when we watch movies where it's a non... traditional landscape. It's not a like set in the now. It's like futuristic. It's alien, whatever. I feel like CGI works so much more effectively. Like on some level, like you look at the Age of Ultron and the, you know, when they're up on those, you know, Thor planets and shit. Like some of the stuff, if it wasn't an alien planet, you'd be like, dude, that looks like a cheesy ass, like, you know, really bad set. But because it's an alien planet, like it can look like that and that's how the alien planet looks. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I forget. On some scenes, the I don't call it the costume, but the thing that Loki wears, that like helmet kind of deal.
Yeah, where it like appears.
Yeah, yeah. Like sometimes it looks pretty badass, and every other angle, like not every, but once in a while, you look at it like, oh, that looks like a foam painted piece of shit, which it probably is. But like you can make it look really badass in a movie, and if it's supposed to be like some futuristic landscape, your mind doesn't say like, hey, that looks like a foam painted set piece.
Right.
And I thought with Mad Max, because it was a futuristic landscape, I thought everything looked really cool. And then even the things that were like, okay, that might have been weird or cheesy, still I thought fit. And there wasn't anything I thought that was weird or cheesy. Maybe one thing, and I thought it worked really well. And there was, I don't want to say like no dialogue, but they did so much with so little. And they didn't
yeah.
have to, they didn't have to tell you why shit was like this.
No, it was just like, it was.
It just was. Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't have to go into too much detail on it. And I
less
also
is
thought,
more.
Yeah, and I thought that because, and this is, you know, what it, the thing it shares with the original Mad Max is that it's really about these, like, vehicles that people are able to get around in this, you know, post-apocalyptic desert-like landscape that, you know, we as humans, we're very used to how things, like, mechanically work in those ways.
Right.
So I feel like it was very easy for our eye to fill in things that might have looked weird because we expect a car to look a certain way or to do make a certain motion. And they just did it really, really well. I thought it was really great. I thought Charlize was great. I thought my boyfriend, Tom Hardy, but I am having a little problem with Tom is that all of a sudden every movie he's in, he sounds like Bane.
It's kind of, well, you said that when we were leaving it, he had some shit like covering his face for like half the ass movie. Like literally, like
that's
it was,
right.
It wasn't
that's
like right. a Bane mask, but it was like, you know.
But he didn't even, at least he didn't talk when he had the over.
Nah.
But then when he took it off, he was like super, like his voice was crazy Bane-ish. He might have said 16 words in the whole movie. I bet you if they broke it down by like, unless it was a movie where somebody played like a person that doesn't speak, that he made the most money per word ever.
Probably.
Besides Marlon Brando in Superman 3.
Oh, that was that's the record.
But that's the record.
I would say if you're on the fence about Mad Max, see it in the theater. It's
yes.
definitely one of those ones that...
Yes.
And if you can, in the 3D, the real yeah. 3D.
Unless you have a 3D TV, in which case you can do that.
I haven't seen any... I know someone that bought a 3D-capable TV,
yeah.
but you have to have an emitter, you have to have the glasses, and
I
you have to have 3D
that
content.
Chris Fett has one, and he loves it. And he okay. frequently talks about... He know, like, he'll go see a movie, he's like, oh, this is going to look so good on 3D on the TV. Like, I've heard him say that before.
And
so.
You can make... Now, to make... I don't understand. I don't know enough about the technology, but can you make non-3D content into 3D? It does that.
I don't know anything about that. He was definitely talking about, you know, acquiring a 3D Blu-ray of whatever he was talking about.
Yes, I think you have to have 3D specific content, but maybe do they broadcast anything in 3D? I bet you they do.
Maybe.
You could pay Comcast an extra $30 a month for 3D content.
These days? Who knows? Who knows?
Our next TV.
Don't start. We're not getting.
Hey, maybe the movers will break it. I don't know.
Hey, don't say shit like that.
I would not be happy, but I would not be pissed about buying a new TV either.
Whatever, dude. Whatever. Whatever. We're not getting a new TV.
No.
No.
All right.
Nope.
You want to, how are we running late? We got time
no,
to talk
about it. We're about an hour right now, so if you
okay.
want to keep talking, let's do it.
What the documentary we watched.
Oh, yeah, the No No.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Documentary about Doc Ellis, the baseball player.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have thought a documentary about Doc Ellis, the baseball player, would have been kind of a social commentary and a lot about race and, you know, athletes, and it was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. I had never heard of Doc Ellis. I'm not a big,
baseball
fan. Let's play the preview for it just so people can get some context to kind of what it's about.
I took some LSD when I took off with the car. And the next thing I know, there I was out there, you know, high as a Georgia pine, tripping on acid.
In a World Series start Doc Ellis.
Doc was basically one hell of a pitcher.
He done a lot of damn good things while he was doing the bad things.
Baseball in that decade really collided with pop culture.
We were a team that was dressed to kill, and Doc, he was flashy.
The old school guys were used to saying, you do it my way.
I remember one time I had my hair braided. And they want to know, what is that about? Don't ask me about my hair being braided. Get out of my face.
He called himself the Muhammad Ali of baseball.
You know, the Pirates was loaded with black and Latin players.
His first roommate was with Roberto Clemente.
And I looked, I said, oh, my God.
And there's nine brothers out there.
That's the first time it had ever happened.
He realized the racial tensions that were going on in the country. Baseball gave him a platform to speak his mind.
There was a wisdom there. He'd been through a hell of a lot.
Somebody had put 3 Ks on my door.
They threatened me. If you stick your head over the dugout, we're going to shoot you. I had my head over the dugout the whole game.
Drugs had really taken over him. I think he thought he was taking them over, but I think it was the other way around.
You know, if Doc pitching, you know he's high. How high is he?
You're not the only pitcher who's thrown him somewhere, man.
I threw to hit him. I mean, I threw to hurt him bad.
Well, here we are, Doc Ellis working on a no-hitter.
It was easier to pitch with the LSD. That's the way I was dealing with the fear of failure.
We got it. They're mounting Doc Ellis on a no-hitter.
It was an ugly no-hitter. I got letters about it. But it was a no-no.
It was a no-no.
It was a no-no.
High on acid.
A documentary.
Right, three.
to feature the music of Adam Horwitz from Beastie Boys. It was just really good. First of all, the image they have on the cover is him in the curlers. It's so great. He had like a diamond ring that just said Doc on it. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I didn't know much about Doc Ellis. I'd heard about this movie because it went to Sundance and did really well there. And just was really good, generally speaking. But yeah, he just... he said he played his entire career as an angry black man.
Yeah. Well, he defied the then, you know, convention of, you know, sort of assimilation and acquiescing. Yes. He was like, okay, I'm a baseball player and you're going to pay me and I'm good, but I'm still black and I'm going to wear my blackness, including curlers. And, there was the one quote where he had, they kept saying he had a real bevy of pitches, including what the one guy called a natural sinker, because that's why he wore the Jerry curl, so he could reach back and get a little something on the ball, like to put some movement on the ball.
Yep.
That's why they call it a spitter, or people put Vaseline under the bill of their hat. So he was the real deal.
Yeah, he was. He definitely was.
His first night in Pittsburgh, he cussed out a cop. You know what I mean? Like,
he was no joke, for real. He really did, like, press with those curlers in his hair.
I was cracking up. They were talking about the use of greenies, which was a methamphetamine, yeah. I guess. And he said he would try to out-milligram the opponent, taking, like, 17, 18, 20 at a time. And he kind of thought of himself as the Muhammad Ali of baseball. And he knew it was a persona, but he knew how to work it. And there was the one bit where they had he was the American League All-star pitcher, and there was he's black, and there was a National League All-star pitcher that was also black, and he went out and made a press statement. There's no way they're going to start two Negroes for the All-star game, and he made the comment deliberately as a challenge so that they would have to start the two black.
Yeah, he wasn't even like
he might have been third best at that point.
He was like, "Oh, it ain't going to start me because they ain't going to put no two black Negroes out there at the same time." Like,
fucking brilliant! Wow, brilliant though. Yeah. I mean, what a smart. I mean, I love it. I absolutely love it. He did a bunch of shit like that.
Just like they said it in the clip, just Pittsburgh starting 9 black players in the playoffs for the first time in any game ever.
Yeah,
which is pretty fucking cool.
Historic.
He threw that no high as shit on acid. So high, he went in a bender, and they're like, "Dude, you're supposed to be at the ballpark right now. Like, you're throwing today."
I should mention that there is some,
controversy.
Some doubt the claim, but people that were close to him, like, "Nah, dude did a lot of drugs, especially acid back in the day." And the people that doubt it say they didn't notice anything different. I'm like, well, you could be hour 9 into an acid trip and still be fucked up at like. Cogent, you know what I mean?
Well, I think the other thing would be if he was as high as he was as frequently as he was, they would think that's normal for him.
That's the real truth,
which
right
is
there.
Really what the real to me. I was like, you're proving his point, not disproving it by saying that, because his contention was he was high every time.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, it would seem pretty fucking normal for him.
Well, he did go on afterwards to become sort of a drug counselor and turned his life around had a whole second career helping people out and. Yeah, he did pretty good. And did you remember when he read the letter from Jackie Robinson?
Yeah, well, Jackie obviously was his hero and he was so... it was important, obviously, I think, for any black baseball player. It's hard not to have... That makes the major leagues to not have a affinity for Jackie, so...
Well, so, but he was... he didn't think of himself as a Jackie Robinson at the time, but he really kind of was. And Jackie wrote a letter to him, and he had never really read it, or at least not in the context, and I took the audio clip so I can play.
Sweet.
There will be times when you will ask yourself, is it worth it all? I can only say, Doc, it is. And even though you will want to yield in the long run, your own feeling about yourself will be most important. Try not to be left alone. Try to get more players to understand your views, and you will find great support. You have made a real contribution. I again appreciate what you're doing. Continued success, Jackie Robinson. Oh, man. I never really did it like that. Oh, shit.
That's Doc Ellis.
That's Doc. So God bless Doc. He's no longer with us. But...
He was the realest motherfucker.
Was really real.
In a long
Jackie,
time.
And that's what Jackie was impressed with him by. Just him kind of having the fortitude to be like, nope, I'm going to be a black man out here and you're not going to tell me anything. And he and Roberto Clemente, as they mentioned, were roommates and very, very close.
Best friends, yeah.
Up until the day that Roberto Clemente died, like his wife was on talking about Doc with tears in her eyes, about how close they were and how he really took Roberto under his wing. So.
You know, remember I said that he was the realest motherfucker out there. He was also a real baseball player. And I don't know if you remember, but when the Big Red Machine at Cincinnati Reds were real popular.
Yeah.
And there was a playoff game where – I can't remember what led up to it, but there was some beaning, a plunking of some sort. And so Doc goes out and is like, I'm going to fucking hit him. Just straight up, I'm going to fucking hit him. And to this day holds the MLB record for plunking, beaning the first five batters he faced before they ejected him or pulled him. He hit Pete Rose, Joe Morgan, Johnny Bench. You know what I mean? Like
big people.
Yeah. And in fact, he...
I think I remember in the thing, he was like, man, if I had been on the mound, there's no way that shit would have ran. And he was like, if they're going to come in here and think they're going to do that here, we're going to shut this shit down right now.
Well, and what was like, even not more funny but interesting, he, in a quote at some point, either before or after the game, was talking about it and was just real honest. Like, there was that... At that time, I think there was this sort of like... Even now, people know that like, revenge beaning and plunking is kind of like a thing. It's maybe not like it used to be in his time in the 70s and 80s, but it's a thing. But it was sort of that thing you didn't talk about. And he came around and was like, yeah, I fucking hit him. I'm going to hit him again. That's what you do. You're going to come this. I'm going to do that. And they had, like, congressional hearings about beaning in baseball. And like, and I don't want to say it was because he's black, but it kind of felt like it was. You know what I mean? Like, because he came out and said the truth, like, fuck yeah, I hit him. Yeah, he did this, I'm going to throw at him. Right. That's how it goes. And like, because of that, like, members of Congress sat on, like, we need to talk about beaning in baseball and the dangers of beaning in baseball.
The things they think they need to talk about in Congress, though. Like Janet Jackson's breast. Yeah.
We talking about boobs?
We talking about boobs?
Boobs? Not the vagina.
Not the vagina.
Not the vagina. We talking about boobs.
Anyway.
That's our Allen Iverson.
Yeah, shout out to Allen Iverson. AI. We watched his documentary, too.
That shit was really good. And another one that...
I love AI.
It was about him and about his life. And I guess I knew a good portion of his life, including the arrest in high school. But the...
I didn't know much about that. I knew everything about his professional career because he played here. But I didn't know much about him, you know... And I know he went to Georgetown, but I didn't know about the stuff that happened to him in high school.
Well, I only knew because it was national news. He was a top national
recruit.
Yeah, but
I wouldn't have been paying attention.
Well, but just like the Doc Ellis documentary, you wouldn't have thought it was going to have so much about racial context and you know what I'm saying? Like very au courant for both those documentaries. But the Iverson documentary was really well done. And, you know, I think even if you don't know Allen Iverson, you can watch it and be like, wow, I appreciate him more as an individual and a player. Just watch it so you can see him fucking cross over Jordan. Boop, boop.
Absolutely. Oh, that crossover is ridiculous.
He had the best first move ever. He was quick as shit.
Just so fast. Just so sick with it.
Answer.
AI. Hands up to the answer. We also are podcasting this week for Single Simulcast.
Rashani.
Shout out to Rashani, who had us on this week. You can check us out. I think it's episode like 187 or something.
You know,
like
we've talked before about podcasts and different approaches to how you podcast.
Yeah.
He's definitely a post editor.
Yeah.
But he does a really good job.
Oh, yeah.
It.
He's very good at it.
His shows have a...
a flow.
A seamlessness to them that, you know, you only achieve through rigorous post-editing.
The opposite of what we do.
Something I'm not willing to do,
rigorous post-editing. But yeah, so those are our last...
Got to pack up the equipment. I hope we got to get set up in like at least the maximum, what's today, the I don't know if we can podcast the 10th, the 11th, maybe by the 12th.
Yeah, maybe.
Friday the 12th. So it's gonna be a long week for all four of you Johnners.
All four people that listen to us every single week. Shout out to all four of you.
I forget who it is, but the person in Finland. It's going to be 10 days.
It'll be a little while. It was a long week last week because we had to wait for C Money to get into town.
Yeah, but I liked having Carl on the bunch.
No,
it was good.
We're definitely going to have, like I said, we're going to try and have Mech at least once a month. His next appearance will be June 24th if everything goes according to plan. I feel like we have to play some sort of Philadelphia song before we leave the air.
What Philadelphia song would you play?
I don't know. I'm so like... Oh my gosh, I don't even know. We could go, you know, McFadden and, you know, Ain't No Stopping Us Now. We could do Rocky. We could do Freeway again. What's the ultimate?
Freeway, Rocky.
Let's, I don't know. Ultimate Philadelphia. Thinking... There's TSOP. That's like the Sound of Philadelphia. That became the Soul Train song.
Oh, I definitely think that's it.
Oh, yeah.
But here, I don't know why I think this is Philadelphia to me.
Oh, that's definitely Philadelphia. Well, that's really, I don't know.
But it starts, listen.
Now this is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute, just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel-Air.
It's Will, though. Isn't it the line about West Philadelphia born and raised?
Right here. Did he start it off that way? Or the second verse?
I think it's the second verse.
Second verse.
This is the full. Yeah. This isn't the TV show music. It's the full one.
In West Philadelphia, born and raised. On the playground is where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool and all. Shooting some b-ball outside of the school. When a couple of guys who were up to no good started making trouble in my neighborhood. I got in one little fight and my mom got scared and said, you're moving with your auntie and uncle.
Grand Rapids!
Right. Well, if we're going to play the ultimate Jazzy Jeff and DJ Jazzy Jeff and Will Smith Philly song, this is it.
Shout out to my girl.
A bit of a break from the norm, just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme, and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's the summertime. Checking out the fellas to tell them who's best. Riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzo's. Back in Philly, we be out in the park. A place called the Plateau is where everybody goes. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise. Honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turned around to see what you leaving at. It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac. And with a pen and pad, I compose this rhyme to hit you and to get you equipped for the summertime.
All right, well, that's the end of our Philly John recordings, 51.
Yeah, you know, they say when one door closes, another one opens.
Yeah.
I hope we don't have to stand in the hallway very long.
I hope not to. I hope that we get through the next doorway quite quickly. That said, the John will not be slowing down in the least. We'll have tons of stuff coming up, and we're going to have some great guests coming up next month. I can't announce them yet, but yeah, you'll start to hear some more.
And I know we implore, but I don't want to like berate y'all listening, but just, you know, give us an email, give us a voice message.
Yeah, dude.
Give us some sort of something.
Stop being so lazy.
Interact. Make us, you know, does anybody listen? I don't know. If a podcast records in the woods and no one emails, Did it really happen?
Did it happen at all?
Did it really happen?
Well, just in case you forgot from the top of the show, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and you can leave those 5-star reviews there. Just search Interracial John, that's J-A-W-N, or you can go to interracialjohn.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or Tumblr at Interracial John. You can follow me at Leslie Mack, M-A-C. You can follow that dude at Very White Guy. And again, you can leave us an email at interracialjohn@gmail.com. So interracialjohn@gmail.com. Or you can call us.
Call us at 657-JAWNERS. That's 657-JOHNER.
Yes. Do exactly what Zoe and Faith have instructed you to do. 657-JOHNERS. That's right.
I turned my mic down. 657-JOHNERS.
That's right. So 657-529-6377. If it's under 3 minutes, we will play it on the show. I think that's it then.
All right. Good job, baby. Good run in Philadelphia.
Yeah. End of the Philly run.
Oh, and now I turned the wrong thing down, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
High five.